vibrancy of the Capital Region through advocacy, resources, and education. Good morning and welcome to AC23. I'm your host, Pam Bordelon, and I've got a very special guest with me today, Baton Rouge native Lewis Hertham, who first garnered fame with his six-year run as Deputy Andy Broom on the hit TV show Murder, She Wrote. He's had numerous roles since then, but his latest is as a cast member in the Netflix hit The Night Agents. Thanks for joining us, Lewis.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Pam.
So what can you tell us about this new role in Night Agent?
Nothing.
It's a secret, huh?
I'm kidding. I can tell you as much as they've released, I guess. It's as most people know that have, obviously those that followed the show, season one has aired, and I'll be in season two. I'll actually be in season three as well.
Yay. But,
I come on. He's kind of a mysterious character. You don't see a whole lot of him in each episode. I think I'm in eight of the 10 episodes. You won't even hear his name mentioned until the very last episode.
Oh, wow.
So he's kind of a bit of a broker. They refer to him as the broker. So he's sort of a broker of intel and kind of a mysterious guy, but interesting character. It was a bit of a challenge because I'd never played someone like this. And to be quite honest, I mean, he's a very, very highly educated man. He's summa cum laude at Harvard. And so he, you know, I don't usually play Ivy League graduates, but, you know, I play more rugged guys, but
yeah,
a lot of fun. Yeah, I think this, and as great as season one was, and as a massive audience that we had for that season, I think season two is going to be a lot better.
Well, I, for one, am looking forward to it because I'm one of the many, many fans that fell in love with Night Agent, and I kind of binged the whole thing over a weekend. Had you ever seen it before you joined the cast, before you got
I actually hadn't, but I did watch it before I was actually cast. I got the audition, and, you know, these days, pardon me, these days, very few auditions are done in person. So everything's what they call self-tape. Mm-hmm. So I self-taped an audition, and I was a little perplexed about this guy, because of what I said. And, you know, you also, when you have very little to go on, you wonder what motivates people to do some of the things they do. So, you know, you do the best you can in a first audition. So I sent the audition in, and then I got a call that they wanted to have a Zoom call with me, with the director and producers and so forth, and the showrunner, creator, Sean Ryan. So that's when I binged the series.
Okay.
And you know, really liked it. And then by the time I had that second round, that Zoom call with those guys, I was very well acquainted with the show, and it went well, and I got cast.
Yay! So, and yeah. I'm real excited to know that there's going to be a season three too. So that's even, is your role a little more prominent in that, or do you not even know yet?
Yeah, let me just say this. If there is a season three, I'll be in it.
Okay.
And I mean, we can never tell. I mean, we got picked up for season two of The Peripheral, and then because of the extended actor strike, they canceled the show, which was a heartbreak. But I think it will get season three because season one was so big. There's no doubt that we'll have a huge audience for season two, and that's what determines it.
Yeah.
It's almost a foregone conclusion, but then, like I say, you never absolutely know until you know. But if my character is scripted, put it that way,
okay,
for the two seasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is not your first time starring in a Netflix series. You were also part of Longmire, which was another something that I was a big fan of. So what was that experience like?
Mm-hmm. Well, Longmire was a great joy to be a part of. My character was, the first three seasons were on A&E. And then they stupidly, in my opinion, canceled it. And something that very rarely happens is the fans demanded the show come back. And when Netflix saw the response, they picked it up and it got another 3 years.
Yeah.
So I was pretty prominent in the first 3 years, not terribly prominent in the second 3 years. Don't know why exactly, but it was a great experience and it is a great show. I mean, it was different. And in my opinion, it's probably what spurred the show Yellowstone.
Yeah.
I think people felt like the modern day Western, you know, was a good idea. And so there have been a couple other shows that have, I've heard that have come out sort of in that milieu. But it's a wonderful show. It was different. The people there were fantastic. I bet they made lifelong friends on that show. And that's not always the case, but yeah. It certainly was in this case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so another big role for you was in Westworld. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that role changed everything for me. I mean, it really did. I was doing pretty well. I was, you know, making a good living as a working actor, which is all you can really hope for in this business. And we shot that, believe it or not, it's August, like in a couple of months, we'll make 10 years since I actually filmed the pilot.
Oh, wow.
And that amazing scene that I was so blessed to have with Anthony Hopkins. We shot that in August and September of 2014. And then we waited several months before HBO, because we only shot the pilot, and then we waited several months. HBO picked it up. Then we went back to shoot season one. And it was such a huge, huge undertaking. Every one of those seasons of that show was. So then it took 2 years to actually come out. It did not air until October 2nd of 2016.
Wow.
So, but getting back to your question, my career literally changed overnight. I mean, I was doing great, but then it just kind of kicked into another gear. And that's kind of how this business works. You suddenly get a role that really showcases you know, what you can do. And, you know, I always felt in my heart that one of these days I would get such a role.
Yeah.
And Peter Abernathy was that role for me.
So do you think it maybe kind of did for you at this stage of your career what Murder, She Wrote did at the beginning?
I'm sorry, it cut out.
Yeah, do you think the Westworld, how it affected your career at this stage of your life, kind of did, was Murder, She Wrote kind of the same at the beginning for you a little bit?
Well, I think in many ways, yes. But Murder, She Wrote, as soon as Murder, She Wrote was over, and it was actually, I was on the show 6 years, but Deputy Andy was only the last five seasons, but I had done two roles previously, one at the end of season five and at the beginning of season six, both of which were in 1989. And then in 1991, I came on as Deputy Andy and played that till the end of the show in 96. But that was a huge break. But after that, I kind of went into producing independent films. Part of me wishes I would have just stayed with the acting, but I really wanted to produce. And so for about 9 or 10 years, I produced. And I know you probably want to ask about that in a bit. But so it didn't really launch my acting career, because I kind of walked away from it to produce.
Okay.
But then got back into it the end of 05 or 2006.
Okay. So. Well, you've played a lot. You mentioned that, you know, it's the first time you've played an Ivy League grad, but you've played a lot of law enforcement kind of roles. So are you a closet cop?
I have played so many cops. I tell you, it's, I'm not a closet cop. Cop. I might be a closet investigator, because I do love research, and I love researching things that interest me. But no, I can't seem to get away from that. In fact, I just auditioned for a role as a local Southern sheriff just yesterday. So, you know, it's like, I guess I'll always have that in the bag somewhere to fall back on. But yeah. I've been blessed though to be able to play several different roles. Yeah. But I have played a bunch of cops.
You now. Have. I was tallying them up. So, of okay. all the great acting you have done over the years, I think my absolute favorite thing I've ever seen you do was the Toyota commercial. Where you're the dad? I think you're dropping your daughter off for college.
Yeah.
You so
she
nailed.
She's going in. Going into the armed forces.
That's it. How did you nail that emotion? How was that?
Well, thank you. I have a daughter, and at that time, and my daughter is my life. And at that time, let's see, I did that, and that was for the end of. I shot that right after Westworld, right after shooting. It was the end of 2014. Okay. And the way that happened, believe it or not, it was the casting director, Deanna Brigidi, who was the assistant to John Papsidera, who cast that show. She was the one that I initially interviewed with for Westworld. And then she brought me back to interview with the producers. But she was casting that commercial. And they said, we're looking for a kind of rugged guy that can play this dad, but he has to be able to do emotion. He has to be able to play emotion very well. And she goes, I got your guy. And so I get a call from my agent and she tells me about this and it was my manager actually. And they said, I said, well, do I have to audition for it? It's a Super Bowl commercial. I'm happy to. And he goes, no, the director just wants to do a Skype at that time. I said, okay. So the guy calls me and he says, did you read the script? I said, I did. And he said, well, you see the different things that we're going through. And I said, yeah, I see that. And he goes, well, do you mind if I just read what's happening and you just show me here on this Skype call, just show me the emotion. You don't have to say anything. And I thought to myself, okay, this is the weirdest audition I've ever done. And so he read it. I reacted to it emotionally or whatever. And he said, thanks. It was like 3 minutes. I called my manager. I said, I'm not getting this commercial. That was the strangest audition I ever had. He goes, well, you never know. Well, I booked it. And as far as getting to that place and that emotion, I, you know, having a daughter, it wasn't hard.
Yeah.
It wasn't hard. And I do love that commercial. Love that commercial.
When I saw it, I was so taken by the emotion at first, I didn't even realize it was you. And then when I saw it again, I went, oh, that's Lewis. So you don't just act. You mentioned that you started doing some producing after Murder, She Wrote, mm-hmm. and you came back to Baton Rouge. And you did a feature film, and the cast included your uncle, Harold Hertham. So did he kind of get you hooked on the acting bug, or where did that come from?
No, it wasn't Harold that got – a lot of people ask me that. I actually got the bug to be in show business when I was 12. My dad took me to the Hart Theater downtown to see Bullet, the movie with Steve McQueen. And the car chase scene is what hooked me. I wanted to be a stuntman.
Okay.
And I wanted to specialize in driving and stunt driving. And that was my goal. But as I went through the rest of my schooling in Baton Rouge, at Baton Rouge High, and very briefly at LSU, I got I was working at Con Turner, and they asked me to do some ads for them. I started doing some modeling, which led to getting an agent in town, Dee Cawthorn, and I was doing TV commercials and stuff like that. And then one day, Dean knew I wanted to be a stunt person, and that was my goal. But, you know, these other things were fun. I was meeting wonderful people and working with wonderful people. And then one day she put a book in my hand, a play, The Rainmaker, by N. Richard Nash. And she said, they're doing this play at the Little Theater. Why don't you go audition for it? And I said, and I had taken one class with Barbara Cheney, lovely woman who used to teach acting in Baton Rouge. And that was about it. You know, I thought, hey, it'll be fun to do this. And long story short, I sucked up the courage to do it because I was scared to death to go in and audition. And I ended up getting the lead, playing Starbuck in The Rainmaker, and that changed my life. There again, the movie Bullet sent me in a direction, and then doing that play sent me in a deeper direction into the industry. And I did, after that, I did Oklahoma at the Auburn Lane Dinner Theater. I did Grease after that at the Auburn Lane Dinner Theater. And then a friend and fellow model from the agency, Julie Sals, called me. She goes, Lewis, I've heard you want to move to California. I said, I do. She said, well, I'm moving and I need a roommate. And I said, well, when are you moving? And I said, I'm doing this play now. And she said, well, I'm moving soon. I said, well, if you're getting a two-bedroom house or apartment or whatever, count me in. So when January of 1982, I moved to California. Been here ever since.
Wow. So Favorite Son is a story of a popular TV sitcom actor who returns to his hometown. Everybody's happy to see him, but apparently he's got a destructive streak. So was there anything autobiographical in this story or biographical in this story?
Oddly enough, some may have developed into being a bit so, but I came up with a storyline, pardon me, about these two brothers, and it was sort of a modern day prodigal son, you know, where the one bad kid goes off and comes back. And I was actually sitting in a service at the St. Monica's Catholic Church, and I just sort of saw the ending of the movie in my head, and it was like this weird kind of epiphany thing. And so I called a buddy of mine, Steve Esteb, who was, a fledgling writer, director. He had directed some documentaries. And so I asked him if he wanted to write it. And he did. So he's the one that came up with the storyline about the actor. So I don't know if he drew upon my life, but I never had a heroin addiction or any kind of drug problem. But I think, you know, he probably pulled some things from my life. And but they were obviously not. That's not a biographical. Yeah.
Well, see, I'm flying blind because I've never seen the movie, so I just figured you were just a rabble rouser.
Yeah, no, well, not like that.
Not like that.
I did come up in the 70s in Baton Rouge, and for those of you who are around, it was some pretty wild times. But and as far as Harold is concerned, Harold was already doing like TV commercials and so forth, so he was acting. But actually, when I had talked to Dee Cawthorn, told me about Blaze, the movie Blaze. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly how it went, but I think she was looking for, I think she may have called me and said, do you think your Uncle Harold would be interested in doing this part? There's no dialogue, but he's always right next to Paul Newman. I said, yeah, probably call him. Everybody that meets Harold is going to love him. And so, of course, he got that role, and then Ron Shelton directed that movie. And after that, Ron put him in every single movie that he made until Harold passed.
Yeah.
And, you know, Harold had two movies booked when he passed away.
Wow.
He was something else. I miss him all the time. He was quite an amazing man.
Yes, he was.
Wonderful man.
So not only did you cast your uncle in that film, but you also cast some very well-known Baton Rouge actors, Ray Gaspard, Mary Lilly, B.J. Hopper, Jamie Wax. How did it feel to be able to showcase some of the other talent in our city?
Oh, it was great. I mean, that was the whole idea. Baton Rouge really turned out for me. I mean, the people that that got involved, and especially wonderful human being by the name of Louis Bonacaz, who came in to help me. I mean, after 6 months of trying to raise money, I had raised about 20% of the budget, and Louis came in and helped me. Didn't help me. He rounded out the rest of the funding with the people that he knew, and it was a learning experience. We never made the money back. And the movie, it was my timing just kind of sucked, to be honest with you, because it was a time when the independent films just like was a huge boom to the independent films, and I got the idea to do it because of films like Brothers McMullen, Sling Blade, and those movies went on to do extremely well. There are very low budget films. Even mine was a lower budget than those, but still very low budget. And but there was such a glut. I'll give you an example. For the year before I submitted to Sundance, which would have been 97, there were 1,200 movies of all genres. And then I think by the time I submitted the next year, there were 4,000. And nowadays, wow. I mean, there are tens of thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, and so we just sort of got lost. I have visions of possibly doing something with the film. If I could, you know, my idea is to shoot modern day and use the old footage as flashback,
okay.
Which would be pretty cool.
It does sound interesting.
Have to see if it would be.
So now that
but being able to cast the folks and you know, back home was great. I'm happy to say that Lara Grice and Jamie Wax, unfortunately the scenes they were in was not used in the film, but both of them got their SAG cards. And of course Lara Grice has had an amazing career. A wonderful actress, and Jim Gleason was in the film, and then the Mary Lilly who he mentioned, and Gaspard. I mean, you know, he's an icon in acting in Baton Rouge.
Yes,
and
he is.
A dear friend. I was the best man at his wedding, at Jackie's wedding.
Neat.
So, yeah, just talked to him the other day. We stay in touch all the time.
That's neat. So what's you mentioned that you trot out for a new role, but what else is on your platter these days now that you're not filming Night Agent?
Actually, as far as acting is concerned, that's about it, because I know I'm under contract with Netflix for this show, so there's like I can't take on another series regular gig. I can do smaller roles, like the thing that I read for is a recurring role. So if I get that, I'm still going to have to, if I do get it, I'd still need to have it okayed, you know, mm-hmm. make sure it doesn't conflict with, because I don't know when we're going back to Night Agent. I don't know, have any idea yet when we'll start shooting season 3. Of course, we got to get picked up for season 3 too.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I am restricted to a degree because of the contract. So I don't really have anything big lined up. Mm-hmm. I am, working on a documentary about one of my passions, which is the JFK assassination. And if I can find the right resources to pull this off, I think it's going to surprise a lot of people.
Okay.
I hope I don't get whacked for saying that.
Keep us posted. So, Louis, how can people stay in touch with you? Where are your social media info?
Well, I'm on Facebook. My Louis Hertham. I have a big green placard at the top says this is my only Facebook page, because I have been, there've been some people that are trying to impersonate me for reasons I cannot understand. But I have a Facebook page under Louis Hertham, and then my Instagram and Twitter are Louis_Hertham.
Okay.
So it's at Louis_Hertham.
All right.
I'm there.
So now
I'm not the greatest with the social media, but I would love for people to follow me.
Sounds like a plan. Louis, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Pam. Thanks for having me.
Okay. We'll talk to you
Bye,
again
Baton Rouge.
Soon.
Love you, Baton Rouge. Okay. Go Tigers.
Welcome to AC23, the podcast of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge, where our mission is to foster the creative capacity and vibrancy of the Capital Region through advocacy, resources, teaching, and training. Welcome to AC23, the podcast of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge, where our mission is to foster the creative capacity and vibrancy of the Capital Region through advocacy, resources, teaching, and training.